So Hebrews chapter 11, and for those of you who have been here, you know I had these kind of subtopics. We typically refer to this as the Hall of Faith, and I had all these subtitles. I've taken those away because I've landed on what I think is my preferred or favorite title here, which is Faith in Action. And what I like about this is when you think about this as the Hall of Faith, right? I mean, these are obviously very patriarchs, right? Grand people in the faith that did all these great things. But when we think about it like the Hall of Faith, it's like thinking about the NBA Hall of Fame, right? And when I think about players who are in the NBA Hall of Fame, I can never achieve those feats that they did. I would never be in the NBA Hall of Fame. That's not what the Hall of Faith is meant for us to look at it as. The Hall of Faith is meant to be examples for us to follow, things that we can do. Now, we may never do these precise things, or we will never be called to sacrifice our child in a specific, like Abraham was, or to do some of these things, but we can live out our faith in action, and we are called to do so, and these are examples of that. And so we've looked at Hebrews chapter 11 in the context of the broader book, right? Remember, the whole theme of the book of Hebrews is access to God, right? Whether you were Jew or Greek, they didn't think that they could come and have a direct relationship with God, but the author of Hebrews shows that that is possible, and therefore we see the superiority of Christ by which we come to God and can have this defined, intimate relationship with God himself. And then we talked about faith having three aspects, right? The heart aspect, just kind of our emotional aspects. The mind aspect, right? The evidence of things not seen, as it says in Hebrews. And then what we see in Hebrews chapter 11, how this fits in, is this is the will aspect. This is like James says, faith in action, or living out our faith by our works. We see that talked about in Hebrews chapter 6 before you get there. What we've looked at is, we talked about Abel and Enoch. I'm actually going to save some of this summary till the end. So rather than kind of going back through it now, let me save it till the end, and I'll tell you why the reason is. But essentially what we've done so far is we've done Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Sarah and then Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. So we've done these. Today we're going to do Moses and Rahab. And go ahead and turn to Hebrews chapter 11. And then after Moses and Rahab, so starting in verse 32 of Hebrews chapter 11, it gives us a broader list. And it says in verse 32, "And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and of Barak and of Samson and Jephthah and David and Samuel and of the prophets," right? Who through faith subdued kingdoms and goes through all these actions of faith that have been done. And then it goes into verse 36, "And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings and who were stoned," in verse 38, "of whom the world was not worthy." So I'm not going to take time to go through individually Gideon or Barak or Samson or Jephthah, because we don't necessarily have, like we've had up until this point, we said, here was a person, by faith, they did this action. We don't necessarily have that for the rest of the people here, so I don't want to interpolate from Scripture something that it's not saying. So I really just wanted to focus on, in chapter 11 of Hebrews, here was the action, here's what this person did, and discuss that particular issue. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to finish up Hebrews chapter 11 today by talking with Moses, or about Moses and Rahab. And then next week is the last Sunday night that I'll be speaking. And we're actually going to look at something from one of Paul's epistles where he talks about a little bit more in depth, in a little bit different way, about what it means for a Christian to have faith. And so we're going to look at a more applied. So now that we've looked at some examples, how can we then take that and make it personal, and what does it look like for us in the church today? What would faith look like in action? And we're going to look, and it's interesting, Paul gives this contrast between what it looks like to have faith or to live with faith versus what it looks like to live unfaithful. And he's not necessarily even talking about Christians versus the world. He's talking about what it looks like for a Christian who's faithful to live versus what it looks like for a Christian who's not faithful to live, and he gives this comparison and contrast. And so that's what we're actually going to do next week, now that once we have the foundation from Hebrews chapter 11. So what we're going to do today is look at, as I said, Moses and Rahab. So we're going to start with Moses here. So let's go ahead and read Hebrews 11, starting in verse 23. And again, you'll see highlighted, by faith, by faith, by faith. So verse 23, by faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw that he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. Verse 24, by faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Verse 27, by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. And then verse 29, by faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians, essaying to do, were drowned. And so we see in this, if you look, five specific acts are highlighted. Now, I want to be very clear, the first act that is highlighted here is not Moses, right? I mean, we could even read this, if we wanted to rephrase this, we could say, by faith, Moses' parents, when he was born, hid him 3 months, right? So this is actually talking about the faith of Moses' parents. And again, this gets very very much in line with what we've talked about with some of the prior examples in Hebrews chapter 11, is the legacy of faith and the influence of the parents on the actions of their children, and that the faith has been handed down. Again, everyone has to make their own decision, and we'll see that individually with Rahab, but we see the impact of the parents flowing through into Moses. The other thing I want to point out before we, on the next slide, we're going to look at each of these five acts individually. But I want to point out a couple things here. In verse 25, you'll see, by faith Moses, notice this, talking about his parents, they were not afraid. So what we could really say here is, by faith, they were not afraid, and therefore they took this action. We even see that with Moses down here. By faith, not fearing the wrath of the king, he forsook Egypt. And so we actually have one of these. I think I've seen it at our house. I think Lauren has something. It's a faith over fear. And so it's this very common thing today, kind of like back in my day, it was the WWJD bracelets, right? The What Would Jesus Do? Right now it's faith over fear. And it comes directly from this passage here. And so what we see is that the impact that faith has on removing or at least reducing the fear that we would have otherwise in our lives when we look to take actions for Christ. So what we're going to do is look at these five acts of faith. And so the first one here is the faith of Moses' parents. And much of, obviously everything here comes from Exodus, because we're talking about Moses and the Exodus and so on. We're not necessarily going to take the time to look at all of these passages in Exodus, so let me just kind of remind you of some of these things that you, for those of you who have been in church any length of time, you probably heard these stories, right? So the children of Egypt, or children of Israel, go into Egypt, right, to avoid the famine. And, you know, you got the 12 sons, Joseph is there, right? He goes through all this, and Joseph dies, but the children of Israel are expanding, they're growing, they're doing well, and the Pharaoh in Egypt gets nervous, right? Because there's too many of them. He thinks they're going to take over. So he tries to, he enslaves them, but they still prosper, and he does all these things, and then what does he say? Okay, I'm just going to have all the male children who are born into the Egypt or to the Israelites. We're just going to kill them, and that's where we have kind of the start of this account come from. And Moses' parents, essentially, they don't abide by the order. They have a son. They hide him for 3 months, and when he gets too old for them to hide, remember, they get his sister, put him in this basket. Put him in the Nile, Pharaoh's daughter finds him, and takes him into their house, okay? So, we could say here that none of this would have happened, or at least through Moses anyways, unless his parents had had faith to take the first step, right? And then Moses comes along. So that's kind of the precondition to Moses being here and then the faith that he will actually show forth, okay? So number two, then we get the ones that are very specifically actions by Moses. So the loyalty of Moses to his people. Now, Moses was brought up in Pharaoh's house, so in the ultimate luxury of the time. He was, by historical accounts, a great general. He conquered Ethiopia on behalf of the Pharaoh in Egypt. He married an Ethiopian princess. So he was like living the ultimate dream at that time. How would he have even known who, quote, his people were? I mean, Pharaoh's daughter wouldn't have told him, most likely. He's not going to say, oh, yeah, I found you in a river, and you're not actually an Egyptian, right? No, she would have taken him in. So, but what happens, right, is when Pharaoh's daughter finds Moses, what happens? His sister Miriam comes up and says, hey, I can go find you a nursemaid, someone to care for the baby and feed the baby. And so she brings Moses' mother in, and so Moses' mother, at least till the baby is weaned, is with Moses. And so she's with him till at least probably age 3 or 4, full time, and then maybe potentially having a relationship thereafter. And so what we see here is the only reason Moses knows who his people are to begin with is, again, the impact that the mother had on the life of Moses. And so again, we see this legacy of faith and the impact of parents passing down faith from generation to generation here. Okay, then we see number 3. By faith, he leaves Egypt. Now, if you look at this, go to verse 27. By faith, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. Now, I want to be very clear, because this could actually be could appear somewhat contradictory. Because if you go back to Ephesians chapter 2 here, and I have it referenced up here, verses 14 through 22. This is verse 14. What has happened is Moses is walking around. He sees an Egyptian taskmaster essentially being mean in, that's in light terms, being mean to the slaves, the Israel slaves, and he steps in and he kills the Egyptian, right? And in verse 14, and he said, and this is one of the two Israelites standing there, who made you a prince or a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? And notice this, and Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. And what does he do? He leaves Egypt. So in Exodus, we see that he feared and left, but in Hebrews chapter 11, it says, not fearing, he forsook Egypt. So how do we reconcile what seems to be apparent contradiction here? Well, remember, Moses left Egypt twice. So he left Egypt after he killed the Egyptian. He was in fear, and he leaves, and then what does he do? He's in Midian for a while. He's married. His faith develops. He meets face to face with God in the burning bush. And then he goes back. And what does he do? Without fear, he brings the people out of Egypt. And so it's interesting that this verse doesn't give us a contradiction. I think this verse actually gives us some insight into the faith maturing of Moses during this time. Is that this whole idea of faith over fear is that after he left Egypt, he had a chance, just like we saw with Abraham, that faith was progressive, right? Through the sanctification process, that our faith grows, it gets stronger, he develops a deeper relationship with God, and as a result, he's able to go back without fear and to take on these next steps of faith. And so not more so, you know, farthest from being a contradiction, I think it really gives us some insight into the maturing, particularly from the faith aspect of Moses during these years. Now we see the Passover. So in Exodus, the God steps in, right? We have the 10 plagues, and the Passover is the final of the 10 plagues. And God's going to send the angel into Egypt, and if you don't have the blood painted on your doorframe, then the angel's going to kill the firstborn child. Otherwise, if the blood is there, the angel will pass over, right? That's the term Passover. And so we see here that it says, by faith, right? He kept the Passover. Now, it was by faith that people did this, right? God said this was going to happen. They took this action, believing that what God said was true. That is an action of faith. But what's more, to me, more of an action of faith is if you look in Exodus, and I have the passage here, as I would encourage you to go back and look through this. In Exodus chapter 12, when Moses talks about the Passover, before it actually happens, he says, when you do this every year or moving forward. So it's not that just Moses thought that this was going to happen now. He had a faith in that what God said was true, it was going to happen, and that the children of Israel would be out of there, and that they would use this as a remembrance moving forward. So again, we see this idea, just like we saw with the patriarchs, with Joseph and with Isaac and so on, is that when they blessed their children, they did so in a way where they had this forward-looking faith that they rested on the promises of God as being true, as if they had already happened, even though in real time they had not. Then we see the last one here, the crossing of the Red Sea. And what I find interesting here is, okay, Moses, a great general for Egypt, he knows the area. Would he, if he had his own way, have led the children of Israel to the edge of the Red Sea, knowing that there's no way to cross and the Egyptians are following them? No. So why does he do that? Because God led him there. So it's interesting. I think that the idea here of the by faith is not that the Red Sea happened, but that Moses followed God to the Red Sea, even when it seemed contradictory to what he would have done himself as the normal general in that situation. So very similar to what we saw with Abraham. So we're starting to see very similar themes kind of flow through a number of these examples. This idea with Enoch and Noah of walking with God, this idea of the legacy of faith with Moses and with Abraham's children. And so, again, we're starting to see the same underlying themes that flow through these examples. So how did Moses have such great faith? Well, if you look in verse 27, the first thing here is, if you look in verse 37, we talked about not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured, notice this phrase, as seeing him who is invisible. And we know later on, Moses was a friend of God. In fact, that's kind of the next thing here. He relied on God. He had this close relationship with him. He walked with God. And it's interesting, Pastor mentioned 2 Corinthians 3:18 this morning. Brian mentioned 2 Corinthians 3:18 this morning, and I'm going to tell you, write down 2 Corinthians 3:18, because exactly what Moses did, he had this close relationship with God. He walked with God as if he was his friend, face to face. We can do the same thing. That's what 2 Corinthians 3:18 tells us, is that we can look directly to God, that we can have this relationship, that we can walk with him. And so I came across this quote that says, the secret to victorious living is facing God before we face the world. And I would actually, in hindsight, I should have changed this. If I were to rewrite this, I would say it this way. The secret to victorious living is walking with God before we walk into the world. Is that if we are going to go into the world and be salt and light, we cannot do that on our own. We must first walk with God and have that relationship that allows the faith to be lived out in practice. And that's what we see in Moses and the other examples that we've looked through in Hebrews chapter 11. So how I would summarize this is, the principle for Moses' life, living by faith requires a relationship with God. Right? I mean, he's the one in whom our faith is built. He is the ultimate foundation of our faith. And so without that relationship, our faith is going to be meaningless and worthless. And then the challenge to us is my friendship with God deep enough to sustain my faith in the midst of difficulties and contradictions? I see the Lawlers here. I really appreciate your testimony this morning, and thank you for bailing him out. So that would have been my wife with me as well. I get a little bit choked up sometimes. So that was phenomenal. I really appreciate you doing that. And that's a tangible example, right? If we were to write down a hall of faith example as being able to live through those difficulties and through those circumstances. And so maybe another way to say this is my faith strong enough to overcome fear? I'm either going to live by fear or I'm going to live by faith. They cannot coexist. And that's what we see in the life of Moses. Okay, so we move on to Rahab now. And we're moving away from the patriarchs, right? So if you think about like the patriarchs of the Jewish faith, I'm going to say Rahab is technically the first Gentile. Well, you may say, well, you know, I guess technically speaking, Abraham was like the father of the Jewish people. So any example we gave before that was not really Jew or Gentile, but really that's the start of the line here. But Rahab comes from outside the faith, outside the Jewish system, outside the Jewish culture here. And so we're going to look here. And we're going to look at Hebrews chapter 11, verses 30 and 31. And while we're going to focus on Rahab, I also want to look at verse 30, which is more so about Joshua and the children of Israel as they enter into the promised land, which then builds up to this example with Rahab. So verse 30 says, by faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were compassed about 7 days. Verse 31, by faith, the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not when she had received the spies with peace. So we see this is obviously the children of Israel had been in the wilderness for 40 years. Okay, and so they're getting ready to move into the promised land. So here is a little map. So here is Jericho. This is the land of Israel. So they've been wandering over here in the wilderness. And they have captured a couple cities, right? So they're now done wandering. They capture a couple kind of minor cities over here. And now they're going to come into the promised land. And they come to Jericho first. Now, if you think about the children of Israel at this time, they had been slaves, right? They have this whole generation that has died away. So they have all these young people. We don't know about any weapons that they had, or at least we're not giving any details. We don't know that they had any formal military training. And they're going to start with the city of Jericho. And this is, I have a, maybe a little bit more real, accurate picture on the next slide. But this gives you an idea about what the walls of Jericho actually look like. So this has been found by archaeologists. And so it would have had a retaining wall here. And this is actually drawn to scale. So there's like a, say, a 5 or 6 foot person. So you got like this 12-foot wall. Then you got a 20-foot wall here, then about 40 to 50 feet of embankment, and then another 20-foot wall. You're not getting in unless they want you in, right? This is like the ultimate wall, okay? And so you think about the children of Israel coming in, why would God have them start with this city? And the answer is because they couldn't do it themselves. They had to do it by faith because there was no human way that they could come in, get the walls down, or take over the city without God showing himself real in the life of the Israelites here. And so they had to do it by faith. Now, here is a little bit more maybe archaeologically correct rendering. And so this is a little bit harder to see. There's some evidence from an excavation. This German archaeologist did this excavation back in the early 1900s, and here's what they found. They actually found Jericho. They found the ruins of the wall, and they found, so notice this. So you got this retaining wall, you got the stone wall, you got the other stone wall, but they kind of more so anticipate that it wasn't like this big embankment like you would slide down a hill, but more like a flat structure that was between the two sets of walls. I personally believe, I could be wrong, this is just speculation, when it talks about Rahab living in the wall, I think she was on the outskirts here. Not actually inside the wall, but kind of on the outskirts, right? The people who were like the upper scale, the ones who really wanted to be protected, they would live inside, within the city. But then you have all these people on the outer fringes, the castaways, the Rahabs. And what the archaeologists found was there was a section on the north side of Jericho that had not fallen like everything else. So very consistent with the account that's given in Scripture. So that's kind of the background here. So what do we know about Rahab? She is called 2 times, in Scripture at least, Rahab the harlot. I mean, it's just very clear. That's what she was. So most likely an outcast of the city. She lived on the outer edges. But there is some speculation that she would have been at least influential, maybe even somewhat wealthy, right? That she almost ran like a, kind of think about like a boarding house. And so travelers would come through, which makes sense as to why the spies would go there. And so, but she had heard accounts of the God of Israel. You know, again, thinking about if this, if she is in fact kind of overseeing like we would think about as a traveling house or like a big hotel, obviously with extra things going on, that you know, she would hear things as travelers come through, right? And she had heard what had happened, that is the children of Israel coming in, they had already taken over these cities. And she believes, she meets the spies and she believes. And as a result, she stakes her whole future on this belief. And she is actually discussed in James, right? What do we know about James? It talks about faith in action, that our faith is lived out by our works. And in James 2:25, it says this, "Likewise also was not Rahab the harlot," again, there it is, "Rahab the harlot justified by works, that she showed forth her works, she showed forth her faith by her works when she had received the messengers and did not send and sent them out another way." So we see that, you know, multiple places in Scripture that she is set forth as an example of what it means to live out your faith in real terms. And then when you think about the genealogy, we really don't know a whole lot about Rahab before this event. We know nothing about her family. We know she takes them with her. We know her name is Rahab, so there's speculation that the Egyptian god, sun god, is Ra, and so she's named after this sun god. So, you know, if that follows, then her family is, you know, historically worshiping a false idol here or the false god. But what we do know, and what's more important, is we know a whole lot about the genealogy of Rahab after this point. Because what we know is that she married Salmon, okay, who there's speculation that he was one of the spies that she hid when they came into Jericho here. But what we know for sure is she's the mother of Boaz, she's in the line of David, and she's therefore in the line of Jesus. And so she has grafted in to the children of Israel, into this line, a non-Jew who is now in the genealogy of Christ. And, you know, when you think, why would Scripture continue to refer to her as Rahab the harlot, right? Why not Rahab, the woman who converted to Judaism, right? Or Rahab, right? Something else. When we see this example here and we see it talked about, what I really like about this example with Rahab is that it tells us that to have faith, I don't have to come from a specific nation. I don't have to have a specific profession. I don't have to have a specific pedigree in my life. And so while we saw all these other examples of the legacy of faith, and yeah, we should do that, and we should strive to pass down faith to our children, in the end, every individual person has to decide for themselves if they're going to have a relationship with God and what their faith is going to look like. And what this example tells us is, I don't have to come from any one area, have any specific thing other than a relationship with Christ. And if I have that, I have the start of faith. And that's the importance of this particular example. So what we see in this example with Rahab is living faith is available to anyone regardless of status or reputation. And then the challenge to us knowing that is my faith one that I share with anyone, right? Or do we say, oh, our faith isn't for them? Or, no, our faith might not be for them. Yeah, they might be deserving, or they might be willing to accept it. The reality is faith is available to anyone. Right? Faith is available to anyone. So how do we summarize all of these examples, right? And we've saw some kind of themes that have continued to flow through these. So let's look at this. Okay. So here are some principles. How would I describe faith from the examples that we saw here? Faith requires obedience. I mean, that we've seen that in James, right? We see that all throughout Scripture. Faith requires obedience. In Enoch, faith requires a continuous walk. Noah, living by faith, may require us to go against culture. We see that happening more and more so today. Living by faith with Abraham is progressive, right? So our faith should flow through sanctification, right? We should be getting stronger and stronger in our faith every day. through every trial, right? Living by faith requires patience. Sometimes we have to wait. Living by faith requires a long-term perspective, right? Looking ahead to the promises that were made and believing that they are true and going to happen with a living hope. Living by faith requires a relationship with God, right? This whole theme of walking with God has been, you know, kind of throughout these people that we've looked at. And then living faith is available to anyone. So if I would then take the challenges, right? So the challenges I would give to us as kind of takeaways here is, particularly for parents and grandparents, am I leaving a legacy of faith to my children? Am I doing everything I can to help them strengthen their faith and their walk with God? Because in the end, that is the single most important thing that we will ever do for our children. Is my faith progressing, right? Am I getting stronger and stronger in my faith each day? That requires me to be, am I walking with God as I should? Am I doing my devotions? Am I walking in prayer? Am I believing what God said is true? So all of these things, again, I go back to the fact that we call this the Hall of Faith, but that doesn't mean that these things or that these principles we have developed are set aside for a small group of people who have this such high level of faith. That's not the whole point of the chapter. The point of the chapter is to show us this is what faith looks like and this is what we should strive for. And so we're going to look at this more in detail next week and give some more practical examples from a Pauline perspective and say, hey, in the church, and it's interesting, the example we're going to look at is Paul contrasts faithful living with unfaithful, and he doesn't do it in the church and outside the church. He says, in the church, you can see faithfulness and you can see unfaithfulness. And let's just make sure we're on the right side of this. And so we're going to look at that next week in terms of some application study. So this has been helpful for me. I hope it has been for you. Again, if you couldn't get all this down, just send me an email. I'll shoot you the PowerPoint. You can kind of take a look at it, all the references, if you would like to do that. So with that, I will turn it over to somebody.